Now get on with it. Come on. Welcome, everyone. Hi, Chrissy. Or Chris.
Nah.
We are here with Miranda Young, founder of Ghost Biker Explorations. And if I read that correctly, you found it on September 11th of 2018.
I did. That's when the page started.
Okay. So, to kind of get to know you a little bit here, for people who may not know you. I have an opening question for everyone that I ask. And it starts out this way. What got you interested in doing the investigations and starting your page and everything like that? What got you really interested and into it?
Well, you know, like a lot of people say, you know, I got interested in it when I was a child. And, you know, my background and interest is in storytelling. And so I had been a paranormal investigator for 10 years, started with a team with my background in photography. And through that, you know, I was posting a lot of photos and everything online and telling the story of a bunch of the different locations that I was visiting. And so I thought, you know, why not document this in through video? And that was how I started Ghost Biker Explorations, was, you know, 3 years ago, just really documenting my travels to these different haunted and historic locations.
Okay. Now, you said you've been an investigator for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Were you with a group or were you an individual?
I was with a team. Yeah, I was with a team. The leader of the team approached me. I had worked in the photography industry for about 6 years at the time. And he approached me to look at some different images from some of their investigations to see if maybe I could debunk some of what they were capturing. And, you know, one picture turned into two and two turned into 10, and that turned into an investigation. And had a lot of fun and a lot of luck on the investigation that they took me on. Ended up getting some really good class EVPs and a lot of great activity. And they invited me to join the team. And so I was with the team for about 8 years. And I did their photo analyzing as well as their social media and putting their videos and such together, their marketing and branding. And I found that when I wasn't investigating with the team, I was out traveling on my bike. And when I started to do Ghost Biker Explorations, I thought it was really not fair to, you know, try to do both because I was doing so much with the team. So I stepped away so that they could, you know, get someone to fill my role and see where Ghost Biker Explorations would go.
So what areas have you investigated and went to that you like the most?
Oh, you know, that's a tough question because I've been to so many and they're all so different. You know, I really like, investigating jails and prisons as well as old hotels. I like those because there's so many different stories to tell. And it seems like every time you go, there's something different just because there's so much to investigate.
That sounds pretty cool. So what's the most exciting one that you've actually done?
It was probably this house that we called the Sunset Hill House. And that was one that was covered in seasons 1 and 2 of Ghost Biker Explorations. And it started as an investigation of a local legend, which was a haunted tub. And the haunted tub was located inside that house. And so I was getting so much activity while I was in the home that I reached out to the homeowner and found out that she had had a lot of activity when she was living in the home. She hadn't lived in it, was using it as storage for about 10 years. And so I went back and did a mini investigation, and it ended up turning into a full 1 year case for us, and was actually able to go in really whenever I wanted to, conduct many different experiments, do lives there. And it basically went from the start of finding out what type of activity we were having in there to the house having to be cleared through a home liberation ceremony through a demonologist so that the right. homeowner could rent out the house.
So was it a, I guess a mischievous type ghost, or was it a...
It was. And you know, I'm not really quick to label something negative or demonic. However, there were five entities in this home. I did feel that one of them in particular was connected with the legend of the haunted tub. And out of those five entities, there was one that was absolutely negative. There was another that was kind of wavering and undecided, and the other three were pretty much just spirits that were being oppressed by the other two.
Okay. That's kind of interesting. Do you, whenever you go to places, do you try to look up the history of it before you go, or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my show is history-driven, first and foremost, history and travel. The paranormal is actually third of everything. And I like to, if I'm going to highlight it as an episode, I like to find places that if there's no paranormal activity, which we know happens more times than not, the story and the history will cover and be interesting enough to last for an episode, even if there's no activity.
Cool. So how far north have you been? Because you're out of... Tennessee or Kentucky?
I am. I'm out of southeast Tennessee.
Tennessee.
I have been, as far as investigating, I've been as far north as Massachusetts, Fall River, Massachusetts, with the Lizzie Borden house. And, cool. Yeah, I've been as far north.
I've heard of that house.
Yeah, that was a fun one. That was a collaboration investigation with Soul Sisters Paranormal. And we did that one last November. But I've been as far north. I did a residential case in southern Michigan in the area escapes me. It was just south of Detroit. And was in on the Toledo, Michigan line area. I did a residential case that far north.
Okay, so you were up near the Canadian border then? At
yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that some places have more activity than the others?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that can change even just by who's investigating the location as well. I think there are a lot of factors that go in to whether, you know, the amount of activity. One in particular that I highlighted last night on my season finale of Ghost Biker. You know, this house was reputed to be the most evil home in North America.
I watched that episode.
Yeah, you know, we got a lot of activity, but by standards of what others have gotten there, we didn't even get half of, you know, the activity of other claims. And that may have been our approach and the way we went in, or it may have just been, you know, the night. But
I want to go there.
It's a very cool, interesting
place. It's not
place.
That far away for us. I mean, you know, being
in
Wisconsin.
We're here in Wisconsin, so.
And you're talking about that Willow's Weep, that yes. cross-shaped house, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's in Indiana.
Yes, and I know it's right on the border right there on the western side of Indiana. And it was an interesting one for sure, just because of all the claims. We didn't really know what we were going to be experiencing when we went in there. And the house was surprisingly quiet, except for the spirit box session and a few EVPs that we got, which we felt were intelligent and definitely, you know, definitely worth the trip up. The only problem I had was that there were bats in the house, and I felt that that kind of messed up some evidence. You know, some of the knocks and bangs that we had gotten early on, we were able to bunk or right. to debunk, which is what I like to do anyways. Go in skeptical, but I felt I had to throw out some things that happened just because of that outside interference.
Oh yeah, I worked in a very old building that was built in the 1800s, and it was supposedly haunted. The people said they saw Civil War ghosts in there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the thing about this building, I worked in there when nobody was in there because I was security. I was a supervisor, on-site supervisor for mm-hmm. Pinkerton Security. And there was this alleyway I had to walk down at night, and there was hundreds and hundreds of bats in there, you know. And there was one time, and this place was so creepy. It was Railvac, the battery man. It was a packaging plant, and they also made the AAA or AA batteries there were mm-hmm. also made there. And it was wide open. Very old building. Like I said, it was built in 1800s at some time, because a sign out front said that the Railvac was established there in 1834, I think it was, or 1848 wow. or something like that. And it had a big picture of Ray, the guy that founded it. Anyway, I was walking through there one night, and I was just kind of off in my own little world, because, you know, by yourself and it's getting late. Squirrel came down from the rafter and jumped right on my back.
Gee.
And I should have known it, but I freaked, you know.
Right.
I mean, I literally freaked out. I had to go to the bathroom just to check afterwards. But I should have known better, because walking around there, you saw everything from possum, the squirrels, the raccoons, the birds up in the rafter.
To bats.
Like no. I said, I was supervisor, and there was one night I got a call, and you hate to get these calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, because the first thing you think is somebody passed away. Nope, it was this girl that got hired to work over there at security, and she was screaming, swore she saw a ghost up and down. I didn't realize that I was wearing a camo shirt. A t-shirt. I just got up, threw my pants on, and I walked out my front door, and I walked right across the street, because I lived right across the street. Walked right into Railvac and had my own key, told her I was on my way, and I freaked her out just because of the shirt. She just and she quit that night. She said, I quit. Transfer me someplace else. Get me transferred. Get me out of here. I don't want to ever come back to this place.
Well, I mean, it's amazing, you know, how much disruption one or two bats can make, or one or two little animals. When you have sort of an infestation, they can sound like, you know, you've got a whole army going on up there.
And it doesn't help when you get the workers there telling all the ghost stories to the security guards when they're brand new there, too, you know.
Right. Well, I definitely recommend checking Willow's Weep out, just because there are so many different stories. You know, there's a lot of alleged stories of things that happen there. You know, some of them that I definitely believe are real, and some I think may be a little embellished. But definitely an interesting place to check out with. For me, the haunting was more psychological than physical.
Sometimes it can be. That was my point, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's how that one was. There seemed to be more mental, emotional things that happened in that home, more so than for me. Now, I know other investigators that have been attacked and such in there. But, definitely an interesting place.
See, one of the things that I've learned over the years from dealing with this is also the person's personality and their mental state and everything can have an aspect of what they see or what they feel they see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even the energies that they project can also change the environment that they're in doing an investigation in.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's where, for me, that's where the bike kind of helps get me centered and stuff before I'm investigating and while I'm on my way. But I'll add to that and say, you know, I had a similar situation. You know, I try to make sure everything is clear and I'm centered and grounded before I go in. You know, if I'm having a bad day or something going on, I don't typically like to investigate because it does seem to influence. I know I had lost my father at the end of last year and did an investigation at the start of this year. And I did a two-nighter, spent the weekend in Mississippi at a funeral home and at a jail. And I investigated both of these locations completely solo. And, you know, I was talking to one of the owners of the jail on the second night. And I was talking about my father who had passed away. And I believe that that was a very big mistake on my part to actually be talking about this in this particular location that had negative entities in it. And and by negative, I don't mean demonic, you know, just, you know, how a jail is. You got, yeah. And so I made that mistake. And I think that they played off of that emotion. I was completely fine. And by the end of the investigation, there were things that was happening, you know, and I was able to document it, but there were things that were happening that were very emotional that I tie directly back to having that conversation inside that jail. It was really interesting.
Yeah. Energies, the spirit's energies, a lot of them, if you have the negative energies like that, they look for places or things in the investigators to actually use against you.
Yes.
Now, how many people do you normally investigate with?
Usually just myself.
Just yourself?
I am not a group.
You don't have a group?
No, I am myself.
You do hook up with groups because I know you.
I do collaborate.
You've been with Chris and Soul Sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do collaborations, but no, I'm a solo investigator, and I will either investigate 100% solo, or I will have a camera person that's followed me on the investigation.
Yeah, she's riding on that motorcycle of hers, which is a sweet looking bike.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's a solo
very
seater.
Nice ride.
but yeah, I mean, I love doing collaborations, but I'm very particular just because of some of the different locations that we go into and that sort of thing.
Now, recently, I got a question now. I got to fix something over here, so I got to get this out of the way first. Recently, you were at a place called Screamville. Haunted attraction in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
Right? Uh-huh. And you did this.
Yes.
How cool is that?
Yes.
Now, for you people that don't know, this is Ralph from Rampage, a.k.a. Stark. Is that correct?
That's
Stark.
Correct. That's
now,
correct.
How cool is that? I'm jealous, by the way.
You know, I was
to
so excited.
To get that close to a wolf, that is cool.
And I'm actually going to, here within probably the next month, actually do a photo shoot with Stark.
There you go.
And with Stark and some of the other wolves that are there at Wild Fell Wolves. We're going to do a photo shoot with the motorcycle. And,
oh, that'll be cool.
I'm so excited. You know, I had seen where they were going to be at Screamville. You know, Screamville created a really cool opportunity. You know, they're a haunt in Knoxville, and they have, they're open two nights a week through the month of October. And so they'll let paranormal investigators and different people, groups such as Wildfell Wolves and everything, come in and meet people and do meet and greets. And so I saw where they were there the night before, so I was kind of bummed when I saw they were there. But then I saw that they were coming back that night, so I was just beyond excited. And they were so nice.
Yeah.
They do great work with the wolves.
So let's see. Our friend Chris at Soul Sisters says, ask her about sleeping alone in Brushy Mountain.
Yes, that was, you know, that ranks up there. You know, you had asked about one of my favorite and wildest experiences. That probably would have to rank second behind the Sunset Hill House. I've investigated Brushy Mountain on 6 different occasions.
Now, where is this?
It is in Petros, Tennessee. Okay. And it's known as the end of the line, and it's where James Earl Ray was housed, and that's where he had escaped from, but was brought back into. And so it's a very interesting prison, and on a couple of those occasions that I've investigated with as collaborations, and other times completely solo. And on this one particular occasion, it was just myself and the two girls who run the paranormal there. The first couple times I investigated, it was not open as a tourist destination. And so they did, over this time period, they actually did some different changes that totally changed the activity. But on this particular one, I slept a couple hours in the solitary confinement area that they call the hole. And this location is literally in a hole.
Now, why would you want to do that?
Well, you know, I actually love sleeping at some of these places because I'll keep the recorders going, and I sometimes tend to get different types of activity than what I get when I'm investigating. And so if I'm going to be at a location for a long period of time, I'll try to sleep a couple hours. And so on this particular occasion, I slept for 3.5 hours. And to be honest, it was the darkest spot of the prison, which was nice. So they have 4 cells in there with these little metal bunks. And I just randomly picked one of the cells, went in, and put a recorder and a video camera on me, and ended up sleeping a pretty solid sleep the whole time. But there was about 3 minutes and 15 seconds of activity that I was able to document while I was sleeping. Everything from the clearest, heaviest footsteps that I've ever caught on an investigation to something telling me not. And it was probably the clearest EVP I've ever captured. And then there was a lot of residual going on. You could hear something going on in laundry above. You could hear what sounded like prisoners talking between the walls. It was definitely a really cool experience. And the two ladies who were there, they were in the office sleeping. And the hole, it's all behind the walls, but it is not in the main prison. It's kind of off. The chapel used to be with it, but it is within the walls.
Interesting. You sound like a very gutsy young woman.
I'm not afraid of too much. I'm more afraid of the traffic that I encounter on my bike. And
oh, hell
the,
yeah. I
agree
with you on that.
That makes sense.
Yeah, between that and then also, you know, between that and people that I encounter every day, I'm more afraid of that. But, you know, I do really like adding that extra level when I sleep at some of these locations, because I feel like sometimes, you know, maybe if a spirit is not communicating with me, I don't know if it could be an intimidation thing, but usually when I go to sleep, I tend to get some type of interaction, and I think it's because you're in that more vulnerable state.
Yeah, I was going to say that. When you do fall asleep like that, you are in more of a vulnerable state. Mm-hmm. You're not... Your subconscious isn't putting up those blockades like it
exactly.
would when you're awake. And so when you're asleep, you're more open to the spirits or the energies of the spirits to be able to kind of intertwine with you a little bit more and actually communicate
Absolutely.
More as that way. Now, one of the questions I was going to ask you, but now I found out you're solo act.
I do investigate with people. Like I said, it depends. Well, so go ahead. I may have an answer.
When you have investigated with groups, I know the Soul Sisters are completely female. Now, you've investigated with groups that have males in them, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay. So the team I was part of was primarily male, except for myself.
Okay. So when you did investigations like that, did you ever find, when you have the activities, did you find that sometimes the spirits would interact more with the female of the group rather than the male of the group?
Certain ones, yes. I did find that. You know, it really depended on the location. I know at Octagon Hall in Franklin, Kentucky, I would get more interaction sometimes with the little girl. But it all depends. I've also found that, you know, occupation can sometimes change. You know, if you're in a prison and you have a male police officer investigating with you, things have changed. But and an interesting fact, the guy that traveled with me during season 1 and 2, he was a male and he was not a paranormal investigator. So we found that we also got different activity. Things kind of like to push and pick on him. And I think mostly because he was this silent, I guess, silent observer in a way. And so at times it almost seemed like as he's trying to film and be quiet, they would want to interact with him just to sort of break that silence and get his attention.
Yeah, trying to be like, why are you not talking? Why are you being a quiet little thing?
Exactly. They would always picking at him. Yeah, and it was an interesting thing, especially, you know, being touched for the first time and all of that. But I've definitely noticed a difference, and we will actually conduct experiments to see, because I am a solo investigator. Mm-hmm. We've done things when I've investigated with Soul Sisters and other teams where we will kind of separate and do, you know, similar test where we're doing the same experiment in different locations to see if they interact different with a solo female, a group of females, or mixed gender people.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
No, it does. It makes a lot of sense because, you know, that's one of the things I've always wondered, because sometimes do EVPs and stuff like that, when this was before Joe and I hooked up to do all this stuff. In my younger years, I used to do some of the stuff too, and I'm a non-practicing Wiccan now, and I used to practice the Wiccan a lot. So I would involve myself in a lot of the stuff to do investigations as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what got me wondering how your reactions were with it, or how your discoveries were.
Yeah, and it's different too, you know, because doing this stuff solo adds kind of a challenging element sometimes, because, you know, when you have those other people with you, you've kind of got that other person that you can riff off of. And on the same token, like what we talked about in the jail, you also have more people to distribute that intake of energy or that drain of energy. It's not just focusing just on that one person. So investigating solo really, you know, there are some advantages to it, especially as far as being able to account for noise pollution. Exactly. And sometimes I think that they also interact with me because I am alone. But then on the flip side, you know, you really have to get creative, and, you know, you do really have to protect yourself as well, because there's not that more people to distribute that energy.
Right. So do you find yourself preparing yourself more mentally whenever you go into certain places?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, that's like with Willow's Weep. I knew that was somewhere that I wasn't going to investigate alone. Just because of the different stories. I try to be really smart about the different locations that I'm visiting, because you have, you know, the spiritual safety and you have the physical safety that you have to keep in mind as well. And so there is a lot of, for myself, a lot of mental preparation. You know, I'm on the motorcycle, so I'm always traveling light. I have to be particular about the types of tools that I'm taking as well. And, you know, Willow's Weep was a girl's trip, so I wasn't on the motorcycle for that one. But if it is a motorcycle investigation, I have to really, you know, prepare for my trigger items, prepare for the items that I'm taking and the size of the location, as well as what some of the reputed stories are that pertain to that location.
Yeah. Again, smart.
Well, you put in a, because you're history driven, you've got to put in a lot of research beforehand, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes. And you know, for me, a lot of the places that I like to highlight on my shows are locations that are not as well known, because the history and the travel is something that I really try to promote. And so I get a lot of my stories by either people approaching me about them, telling me, you know, something that's a local legend, or different books that are kind of tailored to a specific area. So for one 20 to 40 minute episode, there's typically 2 to 3 months of work that goes into it. Usually a month before, with the trips to the archives, trying to talk to people, find out this history, and then writing my script for my story and planning out my travel route, and then actually doing the investigation. And then, of course, you hope that you get activity, you know, with after all that preparation, and then just the hours that goes into listening to audio, because I also have static cameras with me too. So for every hour, there's typically anywhere from, you know, 2 to 3 more hours of analyzing that, because there's audio and video to go with it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And then putting it together after that. So usually 3 to 4 months per episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
Intrigue there. Now, I guess, do you try to do all your research from your home computer, or do you actually take it into the areas that you're going to and try to maybe like a local library or records place
State
there?
Historical Society.
So, I
yeah,
do.
Historical Society, and try to see if they have a difference in the history that you find?
I do. I look at several different levels. So, you know, I always start, you know, with the basics on Google to see what's out there. And right. Then, of course, you know, you're always kind of, you know, weeding through sometimes a lot of crap.
Yeah, weed out a lot of, yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And so I try to see, you know, what others are saying as far as experiences go, or others are saying as far as the history. And if I can make actual trips to the archive and the library in that area, that's where I really like to go, because some of these different archives, they're so full of interesting information that you wouldn't find just looking online. And then if I have the opportunity to be able to talk to the owner of the location or other people who have experienced it, say if it's a bridge or, you know, mm-hmm. some specific area, if I can talk to some of the locals, I like to do that as well.
Okay. Yeah. That's good habits to get into. So you said like it's a bridge or anything like that. So mm-hmm. that would indicate to me that you don't just stick with just buildings.
Absolutely not. You know, one of the episodes that I covered in season 3, it was sort of a unique investigation and is actually probably my favorite episode that I've put out so far, because it was so different. I covered the 1944 troop train tragedy in Jellicoe, Tennessee. And it was actually High Cliff, Tennessee, but the closest town was Jellicoe. But this location was just marked from probably a little 8x8 sign on a light pole on the side of the road. And I found it when I was researching for a haunted motorcycle ride that I was hosting. And so I started looking into it further, and Jellicoe has a ton of information about this, and it's actually ranked in the top 25 railway accidents in America. and it's the worst troop train accident. And so there's really hardly anywhere to pull off on this road, because apparently at one time the Boy Scouts had put up a memorial on one of the big giant rocks where the train had derailed, and you could see it from the road back, I believe, in the early 2000s. Well, the monument has washed off the rock and the trees have grown up, so you can't see it from the road. So you have to ride about a quarter of a mile down past the sign to this tiny little shoulder and literally rail and, you know, go down the whole side of this embankment with, you know, road trash and all kinds of fun things, and hiked back there and did this investigation. So I did it during the daytime, didn't know if I was going to get anything, but I thought this is a very interesting story to be able to share, because a lot of people have either heard of it and forgotten, or they didn't know the entire history. So I shared the history on it and made one trip down, investigated for about 2 hours, went back a week later, and because it's about a 3-hour drive from where I live, and rode back up there the next week and hiked down further down the river. I couldn't go on down to the actual train wreck site at first because it had been flooded. You literally have to cross rocks, and you know, there's no shoreline, it's all rocks, and got some really cool evidence. I wanted to really show that you don't have to investigate at night, and you don't have to investigate the traditional spooky type places, that things are happening all around us, and there's an interesting story to tell.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we've gone out during the day.
Oh yeah, yeah. And we've caught stuff. You know, one of the places we caught, we actually had a problem when we got back to download the footage. It was corrupt.
Happens.
It was during the day.
Yeah.
So it was really.
But we had some cool stuff happen, and yeah, when we tried to get the evidence to prove it, it was gone.
Yeah, and I've had that happen myself before, you know, and with this one, I mean, you know, we had to be really creative with filming because, you know, my videographer, we were on just kind of this 10 by 10 rock and having to try to film it.
I saw that video.
Yeah.
Wow.
I saw that episode. It was, yeah, it looked dangerous.
Yeah, it was definitely a interesting location in and of itself, and I did not want to be down there after dark just because it is so secluded, and I mean, you know, you could tell no one had been down there for a long time.
Yeah, I think that would have been interesting to try to climb out of there after dark.
Yeah, and so you know, we didn't really expect to get any type of you know, audible disembodied voices or EVPs. I did capture two, but you know, there was so much from the road that was up on the mountainside and the water around, we had to really rely on, you know, the EDI box making subtle changes, more alarm and audible type, you know, the ovilus, the dowsing rods, those sort of things. We had to rely on some different pieces.
So how well do those actually work when you're out there for investigating paranormal and people? I was noticing somebody you were collaborating with was using those in one of your recent posts that I was watching.
Yes, I think I put a video of Tiffany using them at a previous location that we had invested.
Yeah, I think that's who it was.
Mm-hmm. I love my Dowson rods. That's probably, other than my recorders, that's probably my favorite tool that I have with me. Only because it's so simple. You know, you don't have to worry about the battery drain. You don't have to worry about asking these spirits to touch something that they haven't ever seen or heard of. A lot of them are familiar with them from using them, you know, back in their time frame, and or at least they're aware of them. And you're able to ask more simple things as far as, you know, pointing to different locations in the area, or also, you know, asking yes and no questions. For me, you know, different tools work well for different people. Some people are able to use the pendulum. I've never had much luck with it, but I've had pretty good luck with the dowsing rods, some locations I've been, they won't even budge, and it's almost like you can feel a resistance. And then other locations, that seems to be the method of communication that they prefer. And so, you know, for me, when they don't work, that just sort of validates the times that, that I do. And, you know, I had done an interesting investigation. I went and investigated my grandparents' farmhouse that was, no one's lived in it since 2005. And, you know, nothing tragic, nothing bad has ever happened there. And it's been, you know, my grandfather and his family lived in the farmhouse. And so, you know, I went in just to do an investigation. And what was interesting about it is I had set the tools down, really didn't get very much activity at all. But the two things that I did end up getting really sort of intrigued me. It's never been investigated there before or anything. And I know there have been two deaths. They were family members and it was just natural causes. But what was interesting was when I was setting my tools out, I had turned my Ovilus 5 on and had it sitting there, and then also had the rods. I pulled those out, and as soon as I set the rods down on the table, the word water came up on the Ovilus, which I thought was really interesting because, you know, sometimes the Ovilus will just kind of spit random things out. Mm-hmm. And the Ovilus said water, and it said, I believe it said bake, which, you know, utilitarian terms, and that was all it said the entire night. But it led me to think that, you know, I mean, because it was literally as soon as I set the rods down beside it, it said water. So, you know, as simple as those pieces of evidence were, I thought they were actually pretty compelling for the location, and then just for out of evidence itself.
Well, actually, that's a pretty good tie-in because people, at least my age, can actually admit to the fact that they know what the dowsing rods originally were used for.
Yeah.
Find water.
To find the water under the ground.
Right. Yeah. And that's what, you know, that's what was intriguing to me about it, was because the other word that I got was the word Sam. And my great-grandfather and great-great-grandfather was named Sam. And so Sam, bake, and water. And I thought, you know, they absolutely know, because they use the rods to find the spring there on the farm to, you know. So I thought that was, you know.
Coincidence? I think not.
Exactly. No, exactly.
I heard this said before. For anything to be a coincidence, it takes an awful lot of time, of planning.
I don't believe in coincidences.
I don't either.
I'm like Gibbs. I'm like Gibbs from NCIS.
Yeah.
You know, I watch a lot of. I watch a lot of those investigative
like,
type
like
shows.
It's like I said, you know, for something to be a coincidence, it takes an awful lot of planning.
That's right. That's right.
So,
I wholeheartedly agree. You know.
Now, have you ever found that possibly that the building is, like, if you're investigating a building that and you get activity, that the activity isn't truly attached to the building itself, it's attached to either an object that's inside the building or the land itself?
Absolutely. And that was part of what I was, you know, sort of on a mission to find out with this Sunset Hill house that I was doing, because when I was investigating that tub, I was getting so much activity on the upper level of the house, I couldn't tell if the activity was coming from the tub or coming from the house itself. And that was what caused me to actually dig into it further. And there have been times, you know, a lot of the time, if I go to a commercial location, you know, I always like to look into it a little bit deeper, because there starts to become all these stories that become associated with the location. And sometimes I think that either some of those are brought in, or again, it's not even tied to the building. Sometimes it's especially in around here, you know, in where there's a lot of Native American tribes.
Same
and
here.
Such.
Yeah, there was
a lot of Native American when I started into this, we found that a lot of the location we've gone through, there's a lot of effigy mounds, burial mounds around here, and a lot of, when we do the research, there's a lot of Native American history tied to it.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things as change starts happening. You know, I mentioned about Brushy Mountain where they were doing the construction. The location that I was just at this past weekend, Henry River Mill Village, they're in the process of renovating those homes. You know, so I kind of like to go in when they're in the process of this sort of thing and see if that changes anything. And that can kind of help to determine if it is, you know, an energy that's sort of trapped within, you know, the walls or whatever of that particular structure, or if it's, you know, because sometimes, and I think that's the instance I did Revenant Acres in Indiana, and, you know, that was a very, very active location, and it's no longer open because the owners, both the husband and wife, have passed away, and the children really didn't want to have anything to do with the paranormal. So when they split up the land or the farmland there that the house is on, they were going to demolish the house. I'm not sure if they've demolished it or not, but I would have to think that unless there was some consecration or something going on with that house when they tear that house down, there's probably still going to be activity in that area just because of everything that's happened. I feel like it was associated with the land.
Yeah. Well, that again is some of the stuff that I find too. A lot of times whenever you got older structures and older areas, like, you know, towns that were formed back in the 1800s and stuff like that.
Some towns that were named something else before.
Anytime there's any renovations happening, that actually will disturb the energies there and cause activities that normally weren't there in the first place.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if the original in time starts to fade and something kind of new sort of starts to morph into something new.
It's a possibility.
Yeah. And especially if, like I said, if they don't like the renovations or like what's happening, mm-hmm. I think that it can turn sort of a benign haunting into not necessarily malevolent, but more mischievous. Or
mischievous, yeah. So anyway, all this that we've been doing, I've noticed over here that Janet Aime, she put something about a bouncing ball EVP. That's been catching my eye over here, and I've been trying to figure out how to work that in. So I would like to know about that.
Yeah, so that was actually a really interesting EVP that I captured, and I captured that one at that point when I was sleeping in the hole. And I have no idea what it was, but to me, it sounded like somebody was just bouncing the ball against the wall. Like if they're sitting there, and I got 5 whole minutes of this just kind of ka-chook, 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 just constant. I mean, it sounds like a ball bouncing from the hand to the floor to the wall. And just, there was 3 distinct bounces. And I don't know, that's what it sounded like to me, but it was very interesting.
Yeah. It would be.
So you also, and Chris, you'd also saying, draw, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Joe, you started it.
I was saying, she says that you also draw the places that you investigate too, huh?
I do. That's actually one of the ways that I fund my travels. Is by the sale of my artwork prints that I do.
Now, is that found someplace else than your website, or?
It's found under the merchandise area of my website. I always draw the different locations, and then I'll give a copy to the owner of the different location. And then, like I said, if it's I've drawn, and to me too, you know, if you're sitting there really studying an area for 6 to 8 to 10 hours, it really helps me feel connected with the location. you know, spending that time drawing. I do black and white pencil drawings, and I appreciate Dr. Sumner mentioning that. Yeah, it's, you know, for me, it's a way to help me feel connected. Other than my motorcycle, it's my happy place. So, and being able to, you know, share those drawings with the owner. You know, I've done the Bel Air House in Ohio and Hell's Bar Dam, a lot of different locations, and I'm working on several more. I try to draw them before I go, but sometimes I'm not able to get to them until after I do the location.
And then Joe says that you do movie characters as well.
I do. I'm working on a slasher series of classic horror icons. And cool. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun.
It's that time of year for those movies, too.
It is. It's.
I actually did watch a couple of the newer, what they call remakes of some of the old classics. They don't do some of those old classics justice.
No, they really don't. You know, some of the classics are a little cheesy when you go back and watch
them. Yeah, but still.
But they're the classics. You can't beat them.
You can't beat some of those classics. No. You know, the first couple of Friday the 13th, you know. Yes. You know, Halloween series with
Michael Myers. Yes.
Yeah. The Michael Myers. But Jamie Lee Curtis.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yes.
Yeah. Except for 3. That should have been a standalone.
Yes, I agree. You know, I feel like...
See? We're not the only ones.
No. I am a purist when it comes to my horror movies. I like the old... And I love the old horror B-movies, too, so...
Well, I used to work in video stores and managed... And I actually owned my own video store before Blockbuster came to town here. So I know a lot about those old classics.
Those were the days, and, you know. I loved going to the video store.
They were just coming out when I, you know, everything was on VHS and everything.
Yes.
And it was just coming out. And one of my favorite cult classic movies, I saw it the other day. I was thinking about renting it. It was called Videodrome.
Ah.
It had James Wood in it. If I remember right.
I've seen that one.
And yeah, it was that movie freaked me out and gave me nightmares. The only movie that gave me nightmares.
Really?
Yeah. And today, if today people watch that, maybe not so much, but the guy was like, he intercepted some television transmission and then he got obsessed with it, and eventually it got creepy after that.
I'll have to check that one out. That's one I don't think I've seen.
I saw it on Amazon Prime for rental. So. And I thought about it, but if the wife didn't, you know, the wife don't like those horror movies, so I said, well, I better not, because that movie gave me nightmares. It's sure to give her nightmares.
Now that's really going back in the day there, Joe.
I know.
That no, not you, my age. Not oh. you, Joe. This the
oh,
Joe Shortridge. He's talking about black and white UFO movies. That's really going back there.
No kidding. Yeah, I mean, for me, that UFO stuff would always kind of creep me out when I was a kid. But, you know, my grandma, she always, you know, I would always go to the video store and watch the horror movies. Those didn't scare me as bad. You know, my grandma would just, you know, she always told me stories about Appalachian haunts and different, you know, folklore and stuff like that. And the old folklore that she would tell me and what I would read at the library was what would keep me up at night as a kid, because some of those things, you know, talking about hearing a death bell and, you know, if you dream about a birth or dream about a funeral and all these different, you know, folklore, that's the stuff that I would think about when I would lay down to go to sleep, and would always kind of creep me out more so than it or I mean Pennywise or Jason or Freddy.
Them were some classics.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, like the new remake of It. I'm sorry, but the guy they had to play Pennywise, he
nobody
could
have done it
handle
as to Tim Curry.
No.
To Tim Curry as Pennywise. That he made.
Yeah, you just
Pennywise
ran into two horror movie buffs, you know.
Yeah. No, I love it. I mean, because I went and saw it, and I, you know, I liked it. I can appreciate it for the effects that they have.
Yeah.
But to me, nothing beats the original. And I look back at the original one now and say, you know, there's parts of it that's kind of, it's like, how did that creep me out as a kid?
Yeah.
But
definitely it, here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Janet says her favorite is The Shining.
Jack yes. Nicholson.
That is freaking awesome. That is an awesome horror movie.
That is my absolute favorite right there. Because there's so much that goes into that. I mean, he is just creepy.
I was just going to say, he's just creepy to begin with.
And he's one of them that's also on my list to draw with of the classic slashers. But, you know, I mean, just the imagery in this, because nothing's creepier than the late 70s, you know, just everything about it. Just the storyline, the psychology and everything behind it. Yeah, that's, I got to say, that's definitely my favorite.
Yep, definitely up there by, in his lonesome.
Yeah, I couldn't pick a favorite movie, you know. It's just,
and not just that,
too many of them out there.
Your mind and him losing his mind in that movie. He's mm-hmm. also got the activity there, which is feeding off of it.
Yes.
Now that right there kind of ties into what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Because they're there by themselves. Mm-hmm. It's the family, her,
and then they get
the child.
Then they get snowed
they
in
get
by a
kind
blizzard.
Of stranded because of the snow, you know, blizzard come through, snows them in.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's kind of losing it a little bit. And then you've got the activity in the hotel itself
mm-hmm.
feeding off of his energies that are coming out.
Exactly.
So they just keep feeding off of it and taking, and it starts making him twist even more
mm-hmm.
and lose his mind even more.
And, you know, I feel like for myself, you can really see that when you're at some of these different locations. I just investigated this year, and it was so much fun. Probably my second favorite, but probably all-time favorite new location, the Grand Old Lady Hotel in Balsam, North Carolina. I was there. It was just myself and Christy filmed for me on the first night of the investigation. So it was just us two in there, and the place had been shut down. They actually keep the same kind of schedule as, you know, they did on The Shining, where basically they're open during the early spring to late fall, and then they're closed in the winter months because Balsam gets a lot of snow and a lot of activity there in the mountains. And so they were closed a little bit longer because of quarantine. And
right.
it was really, you know, I was in there, and a lot of the time when I go into these locations, I kind of let the location speak to me as to, you know, I'll go in with a plan, obviously, because I have to plan, you know, pretty heavily for these. But I also like to go in and kind of let the location speak to me as to where I'm going to start and some of the different experiments and the places I'll do them. And I'll put myself in that situation. I try to kind of go back to the time frame and that sort of thing. And I kept thinking when I was in this location, I can understand why this guy would lose his mind if you were, and this hotel was not the size of the Overlook Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Stanley.
Yeah.
You know, it was, it was definitely that same kind of mind frame. And I can see if some of the activity that I encountered at my hotel that I was at, if I was experiencing what he was, it's definitely enough to make you lose your mind.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But then, you know, with all the different, well, like Joe was saying there, too, the different conspiracies that were actually hidden in that movie, too.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a twister. It's a
now
really
I'm probably going to go watch it this evening after we get done here, because I try to watch horror movies all through the month of October, but since I released my season during October, I am just, you know, slammed with stuff, and I haven't got to do that the last 2 years. And now that the season is stopped, I may go watch that one tonight.
Yeah, The Shining was a very fun one, very interesting. So,
mm-hmm.
Joe, you got anything else?
I had something else, but I lost the picture.
Oh shoot. I'll leave it to him to goof up.
Well, I'll tell you, I haven't been able to share the feed because Facebook has been messed up over here and won't let me share. I've tried several different solutions and nothing.
Oh, so we're not, it's not sharing. We're live, but it's not sharing.
Yeah.
Damn thing.
It's Facebook for you. What do you expect?
I know. Facebook does this every now and then. It's just, yeah,
but anyway.
And it just. But we're at least sharing on YouTube, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're streaming to that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think I'm seeing it shared on...
Yeah, because some of my comments mm-hmm. came up on YouTube when I wrote them down, too.
Yeah,
I see. So I was answering people back instead of trying to interrupt people. Yeah, Soul Sisters was coming through YouTube.
Oh, yeah. It's not coming through Facebook.
Okay. No. Anyway.
Interesting.
So
well, thank everyone for tuning in, though. I definitely appreciate that. I've been looking at some of the different comments over here on the side, too. And so it's always awesome when you do these lives and people come on and interact and ask questions.
Yeah, it's
fun. I love it.
That's what makes this fun.
That is what makes it fun. It's when you got other people that come in and watch, and then they can make comments on the site here because you got, you know, and then you can read anything that they have to ask and stuff, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
no, I was trying to get this prepared for the end because we were getting close to that 7 o'clock hour.
Yeah, I know.
That wanted to mention about Saturday and Friday, and that's what I needed in my book.
Okay.
You have any interesting, fun things coming up for Halloween?
Actually,
yes,
we do.
Nice.
That's what I'm about.
Well, I can tell you if you'd want me to, Joe, or do you want to spill the beans on it?
I've got the post right here.
Okay, fine. He'll spill the beans then, I guess.
So you can see it.
I'll wait.
On Saturday, Halloween.
Saturday, Halloween.
We will be investigating this place. It's the Arts Mill in Grafton. Now, we're not going to be alone. We're going to have our friends from Off the Rails Comedy Podcast with us, Tom and Molly. We will have Mark's daughter, Kayla, with us. And we will also be joined by Christopher Kai House.
Yep.
Very cool. And, are you doing any live feeds or anything like that?
We're going to try. Us and Chris. Christopher Kai House is also going to try, too.
Well, I will be on the lookout for that. I always love seeing what other investigators are doing and what they're getting and finding new people to follow. I love that.
That's one of the reasons I went and got my new toy.
What is that one?
It's a new cell phone.
This is the Galaxy S20.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I just got it today. I haven't really had a chance to play with it much.
Is it one of them that... The foldy ones?
No,
okay, good. I didn't know how that would actually work, but
somebody's made a comment here. Just have to say again to Miranda, thank you for being a huge inspiration to my crew, and I learn weekly from you.
Well, thank you.
That's nice.
That means
very
a lot.
Nice.
Thank you. I've actually met Peppy Purple Eyes. I believe it was. I can't remember if it was my first episode of season 3. I've not got to actually physically meet them. And I had hoped to maybe get to see them when I was there at Screamville, but I'm hoping 2020 to actually be able to personally meet them. But we interacted a lot on YouTube. So thank you for saying that. That means a lot.
I'm hoping that next year is going to be a lot different than this year.
And then Friday, just let me finish this now first. Friday, Neil Kay from Our Haunted Lives will be joining us as our guest on Friday.
Yep.
So that ought to be
so
fun.
Yeah, Saturday's going to be interesting. We're going to be there doing the investigation in the evening, and it's going to be obviously on Halloween, and it's going to be a full
three different podcasts involved.
And there's very three different, cool. Yeah, there's three different podcasts involved.
Two different paranormal investigators involved. It's going to be our group and Chris.
Right. But it's going to be a full House. Blue moon.
Yes,
it's supposed to be a. I saw.
What is that? The first time in 75 or 76 years?
Something like that.
On Halloween, yeah. Since 1944.
On Halloween, yeah, yes. That's great.
Since 1944. So. Yes.
And we get an extra hour of
And then we fall back too at midnight.
The last time there was a
we fall back.
That's right.
Thank you for reminding me of that.
Yeah. So it's a lot of interesting things happening on Saturday.
Yeah, I got my first tattoo when I saw my first blue moon. I was 40. It was like 13 years ago. it was a wolf. It's on my shoulder. It's a wolf howling at a blue moon.
Oh, very cool.
So, do you got anything exciting coming up for you, or are you
pretty much
going to sit back and relax?
Going to relax a little bit. I've been actually doing tours and meet and greets and everything since the end of August. Just released the season finale of season 3 last night.
Okay.
I will have a live broadcast tomorrow night. I'm actually loaded up with podcasts for the next week, but I've got a collaboration podcast with Dr. Sumner where we're going to talk about a couple of the investigations we've done together, Lizzie Borden, the Grand Old Lady, those sort of things tomorrow
I'm
night.
Tune in for that.
Yes, that's going
to be.
That will be tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on Mad Dog Radio. I'll have to look. I'll have it posted on my page.
Okay.
And then also right directly after that, I do a thing on Thursday nights called Behind the Screams Live, where I talk about the previous investigation and the previous episode. And then I'm trying to think. I've got some investigations lined up for December and then next year, but I'm pretty much taking the month of November off because I haven't slept much this month or the last 2 months. But well,
I'm taking the end of the year or end of the world off.
Yeah. How far have you ever traveled? I mean, you're on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever gone as far as the West Coast to investigate? Or
I have done some. I was actually out at the Stanley Hotel a few. It's been about 5 years ago. 8 years ago, but I'm hoping to actually make it out west. I had some plans for an event and then also investigating in New Mexico, but a lot of that got canceled due to COVID. So I'm hoping in 2021 to actually do the majority of my investigating out there, out west, cool. To hit some different
what
places.
What part of New Mexico?
It was going to be in Las Cruces.
Las Cruces, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think because I know right where Albuquerque sits. That's an easy one.
Yeah, we were trying to. I was supposed to fly into El Paso and then on into Albuquerque, and then we were going to drive down. There were some people in Albuquerque that were going to take me to Mountain Air to the Schaefer Hotel. And two or three different places in Mountain Air, New Mexico, which I think was maybe like a 2-hour drive from Las Cruces, and then go on into Las Cruces and investigate the jail and I believe it was the courthouse in there. And so I know it's so interesting because there's so many different hauntings around the world. It's so different than what we have here in the Appalachians. You know, and so I just love seeing, even though, you know, we're in the same country, everything is so different in the different areas, right. Even down to the hauntings.
Well, yeah, I'm originally from California.
Okay.
And
he's a transplant.
Yeah, I'm a transplant out here. But there is a restaurant lodge, I believe, in California that I remember hearing of. The way it was built, over top of a creek.
Hmm.
So the creek literally runs through the middle of it. And
okay.
The seating for the restaurant is like up around the creek and everything. Supposedly, there was a little girl that drowned in the creek.
Okay.
Inside the restaurant.
Wow.
Yeah. And that she's supposed to be seen in there.
That's interesting. So, and I'd have to
research that again to find out what the name of it is, because I can't remember the name of it for the life of me. So,
before we started, I just learned about a prison in Iowa, or a jail in Iowa that I'd like to go to. It's in Pottawatomie, Iowa, in that area. It's one of these circular jails.
Oh, yes.
And there's only three in the U.S.
Wow.
And that one's... I saw it on one of those Travel Channel deals, most terrifying places in the world, in the U.S. And they were counting them down, and they were... That was one of the places. And it's like, wow, I never heard of that.
Well, I definitely want to make it up that way because, you know, one of my bucket lists that I've just always wanted to just kind of see and experience, I've always wanted to go to Villisca. And, you know, I know that it's kind of a, you know, paratourism sort of thing, but I know there are a lot of different places that, when I go, I can hit in that whole Iowa, Wisconsin, you know, type area. So, you know, so I hope to kind of make it up that way.
Yeah, there's another place I want just to go get my picture taken there, and that's the place that the music died, you know, where the plane went down that carried Buddy Richie Valens and the Big Bopper.
Yes. And you know, for me, that's the type of places that I like to cover and tell the story of, you know, like the Blues Highway, Route 66. Yeah, those places that, you know, because I'm always telling people that, you know, if you take a map, close your eyes and touch anywhere on that map, you can't find a spot, no matter how small it is, that doesn't have a local legend or a story to tell. And so, you know, that's what I like to do with my episode. You know, I do cover some of the larger places, but my goal is bringing awareness to that travel and that history of these smaller locations.
My favorite part is the history, because I thought I knew a lot about Wisconsin because I grew up here. Now, I don't know squat compared to what I've been learning since we've been doing this, because we just cover this and find out the history of this, and it's like, wow.
And that's the beautiful thing. You can never stop learning, you know, and I love learning from these other teams and, you know, different techniques and the history, different things people, you know, they may not realize what they're saying, but, you know, they're putting, you know, knowledge out there, and I love it. So
And people in the paranormal field that we've met have been just fantastic people, really nice people.
Definitely.
Willing to give you all the little tips and tricks and give you some knowledge. And,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
absolutely.
share their adventures with you and their stories with you. It's been a hell of an adventure so far.
Absolutely, I totally agree. And you like know, I said,
and we cover it all: the UFOs, the ghosts, and the cryptids. You know, which is one of my favorite parts too. You know. Because we covered a unique spot, and we found a lot more than what we were prepared to find.
And I found myself that, you know, my study has mostly been within the paranormal with spirits, but a lot of those are, the more you dig into it, you realize that the cryptids and even some of the UFO activity can be paranormally linked, I guess. You know, so it's that's been the most interesting part that I've found out of, you know, all of it, is there's a lot of things that are linked.
Stick around after we'll sign off here. We're a little over. We'll share a little secret with you.
I'll be here.
So, and since we've already made our announcements, is there anything else you need to want to say and share to everybody? Can find you there, buy some of her artwork, help support her rides.
Yeah.
So we can see some more
definitely.
Of those great videos. I mean, they're amazingly put together, by the way.
Thank you.
I mean, whoever does that, I don't know if you do that yourself.
I do.
That's got to be a lot of patience and hard work to put that stuff together the way you do and edit all of that. I hate editing.
Well, thank you. It is self-produced, and people can catch up on all three seasons now by going to ghostbikerexplorations.com. They can purchase merchandise, drawings, watch all the seasons. And then I'm very, very active on Facebook under Ghostbiker Explorations. We'll be doing lives throughout the year, and I'm hoping to actually have more videos. My push is always in October to release the episodes, but since I'm doing, all of the editing and everything myself, it kind of opens me up to be able to do more throughout the year. So, hoping to maybe pick back up mid-December, and then throughout the year, I've got a bunch of different announcements that I'll be making about different appearances and events coming up. And like I said, also the YouTube channel. I'm trying to really grow that platform, so definitely subscribe to the Ghost Biker Explorations YouTube channel, and follow my photography on Instagram under Runaway Vixen.
And all those links can be found on ghostbikersexploration.com.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
All right. And then you can find us on utterlyinsaneproductions.com. So, and we are out of here. So stay safe, everybody, till Friday.
Thank you, everyone.
We'll
stay safe, stay healthy.
I lost my mouse. There we go.